So if you think about it, the Snyder Cut fans and the Drake fans in the year of 2025 have a lot in common because they're both unrealistically and obsessively.
Listen. I hate to interrupt, but welcome to Hate to Interrupt episode, 22, 23? I am Ethan, otherwise known as Gulif on youtube.com/Gulif. I am joined by
Nick from Stop Culture.
VHS guy, Nick.
And today.
Today we're talking about, we wanted to cover some of our box office predictions for the blockbuster movies that are coming out over the summer. There's like three big ones that we want to get into and talk about some of the trailers. And then as the second week of our Ode to Love in February of 2025, we're going to be talking about Chungking Express, the 1994 Wong Kar-wai movie. Was it 94?
Yep, 1994.
Let's start with Superman. I mean, Gul, if you made a video about the Superman trailer, you're pretty hyped on it, right?
I'm a certified James Gunn enjoyer, and it wasn't until just him being attached to do a Superman movie that I was like actually interested, and all it took was that first trailer to really get me on board. So I'm so excited for this one, because I don't know about you guys, but I did not connect with Zack Snyder's dark.
I thought Man of Steel sucked, and I'm excited for it too. But I don't think how good I think it's going to be really ties into my predictions on it either.
Same. I'm in the same.
Yeah. I mean, it's tricky with Superman and Batman, because I feel like just thinking about it right off the bat, like, you would assume that a Superman or Batman movie would do better than a Marvel movie, but that's in the past like 15 years or so, it hasn't really been the case. Like, since The Dark Knight, I don't think there's been a Batman or even a DC movie that's even come close to outperforming Marvel at the box office. So if we're going to be pitting them against each other this summer, like, I would have to assume that even though the Superman movie has a lot going for it with the, you know, DC rebrand and everything, I have to assume that Marvel's going to continue to hold out even though it's on a decline.
At least until DC proves themselves a little bit, you know?
I think they're both in an interesting spot. That's why I think the comparisons are so fun, because you have two companies or two brands. You have DC and you have Marvel that are both in these really pivotal points of their like lifespan, where you have DC has to kick off this brand new series of movies that reinvent the franchise with Superman, which is, you know, DC's golden boy. That's their, except for Batman, who's the moneymaker. But Superman is DC. He is the superhero you think of. And then you have Marvel, who has been kind of petering off in the last few years, just not really sure how to get their footing after Endgame, because so many people jumped off after that. And now they've got all their IPs back after purchasing Fox, or most of them. And Fantastic Four is like the first big Marvel team from the comics. So you have these two iconic characters that are essentially this big moment, and it's crazy to me that they're happening within the same month.
Yeah.
I mean, DC has to basically like reignite their, or I mean, DC has to basically like find their spark, and like Marvel has to reignite it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think that it's interesting, because I've definitely enjoyed the Marvel films a little bit more than most people have. Like, I've even found some of the ones in the in like post 2020 era have been pretty enjoyable. Like, I really like Chungking. I thought that was a Shang-Chi, not Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi. What the fuck?
Shang-Chi was fine.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty fun movie. Shang-Chi. And I don't know why the fuck I said Chungking, but but yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely curious to see how it'll perform. And I think the Fantastic Four movie has a lot going for it. It's got Pedro Pascal. It's got a lot of really hot actors at the moment. And I think people are really excited to see it, despite the fact that personally I've never really been much of a Fantastic Four guy. I don't really see that team as being very cinematically viable. Just in terms of like on a surface level, like power set base. Like, Stretchy Man does not really sound like a good fucking leader of this.
But his whole thing
man.
Is he's extremely smart. And he's
of course. But I'm just saying,
which is why I think the Pedro Pascal fucking casting is stupid, because he really doesn't come off as a smart guy to me. He can't play smart very well.
Do you notice they didn't show him stretching in the trailer? I think that was pretty smart.
Maybe they're trying to get the VFX dialed in. They can't figure it out because it's never really looked good in live action. It's interesting because you're like, I don't think this team works. It's funny because in a way they are kind of dated, which is why I love the idea of making it this like 1970s retro future or like 1960s retro future aesthetic for the whole movie. I think that's really smart.
I think they work in a way where it's like they kind of need all four of them to equal out to one good superhero, you know? Like they're a team for a reason.
Yeah. I think what really happened with Marvel in post 2020 is like Feige just got too cocky. He thought he could turn anything into gold, basically. And he found out pretty quickly that despite what people on the internet say, Marvel fans are obviously not willing to watch anything, you know, like they'll if they do another fucking, I don't know, what was like the worst series they did?
I didn't see it, but I heard Secret Invasion was horrendous.
Yeah, like see, everyone hated that. And like the Marvel fans have been getting really pissed off lately. I think that I don't know. There's a reason why Feige is the most successful movie producer of all time. Like, I think he's going to turn it around. I think he's too good not to. So I think that we'll be seeing like at least a higher caliber of film from them in the next couple years. I mean, it's make or break, really. They have to start doing it. So.
I think this era they're currently in is like they have to learn from this and realize that they can't do anything. They still have to put out quality. Because as much as like, you know, people are like, oh, who cares about, you know, Agatha all along? Who cares about Shang-Chi? Who cares about, you know, any number of these characters? If you put out good quality, you know, movies and series, people will watch them from word of mouth. I mean, you know, you might get unlucky, but the problem is so many of these are just kind of mediocre. And nobody, that's kind of what got me off of it. I have not kept up. I used to watch every single MCU movie. And as soon as the MCU MCU series started on Disney Plus, I could not keep up with it because they were mostly mediocre or bad. And there were so many goddamn shows. I think it's like someone made like a graph and it was like phase three of the MCU was 27 hours long total or 20 something. And then phase four at the time, which was supposedly halfway done, according to Kevin Feige, was like almost 50 hours because of the shows.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I just stopped. I haven't watched like a bunch of the newer things.
Yeah, I didn't any of the shows I watched.
That was part of the Bob Chapek content mandate. Like when they were starting Disney Plus, they were really trying to push on Star Wars, like Feige at Star Wars and Kathleen Kennedy to just like keep pumping out streaming content so they could boost the streaming numbers.
Make Disney Plus
look successful.
I think Daredevil might be the only Marvel show that I'm actually excited about checking out.
Yeah, I just watched it while I was catching up on all the trailers that we're going to discuss today. I watched the Daredevil one too, and that one's coming out in just a couple weeks. So
it looks pretty solid.
I need to finish that out. I never ended up finishing the Netflix Daredevil.
So I guess Gulif, what do you think? What are your predictions on the Superman?
Oh wait, well we talked about Superman a little bit. We talked about Fantastic Four. How are we feeling generally on just Jurassic World Rebirth? Did you guys watch the trailer for it?
Yeah, I've never been a Jurassic World guy or a Jurassic Park guy at all, really. So I don't know. I don't know too much about this franchise.
I think I don't really like the new ones very much, but I will say I get the appeal. And it definitely has like worldwide appeal. Like it's something that like people in China are definitely going to want to go see because it's like really pretty. Yeah. And like it looks way better than the fucking Chris Pratt movies. Let's be real. The trailer looks way better than the Chris Pratt movies. So, I mean, I have high hopes for it. I think it'll be cool.
I am a certified dinosaur lover. I was that kid. You know, every kid has a dinosaur phase. I am still in that dinosaur phase. I wanted to be a paleontologist growing up. If someone offered me a job as a paleontologist right now, I'd probably take it. I think dinosaurs are so goddamn cool, and they're so underrepresented in good media. And essentially, Jurassic Park, this whole franchise, is the only real mainstream like movie series about dinosaurs, so they kind of have the market cornered. And my god, the Jurassic World movies are fucking horrendous.
I watched
the first one. I've seen bits of the second and third, and I just didn't bother. I was so offended after seeing the first Jurassic World in high school. But I would watch like the it wasn't even Jurassic Park itself. I would watch the making of Jurassic Park. That was what really got me into like filmmaking.
Jurassic Park 1 is like a masterpiece. It's so fucking good.
It's a perfect film. It's so good. Not only is it like the spectacle and of course the revolutionary VFX for the time, but it's like also just a genuinely great story with great characters and an amazing theme that all ties in together perfectly. And the theme itself kind of makes it to where you shouldn't make a sequel, because it's like, why would you mess around with this thing that's already happened and gone wrong? And they're like, well, we're making another one.
Honestly, like, that's human nature. Fucking
yeah, I know.
That makes sense in that context.
But I've been kind of excited for this new one. For
it's like the pterodactyl that flew too close to the sun, is what you're saying?
Yes, yeah, pretty much.
The pterosaurs that flew too close to the sun. Yeah, I've been excited for this because I like Gareth Evans. Or is it Gareth Edwards or Evans? Is it Edwards? Gareth Edwards. I'm not particularly in his writing style. I think he is a great visual director, and he's really good at making visual effects look real and tangible. Like
these types
Godzilla
of movies, they're not actually writing them anyways. This is all like they're sitting in a big room and being like, it would be cool if they did this.
And I don't know. I think they decide plot beats. The original screenwriter of the first two Jurassic Parks. And it's just him writing it as David Kapp. Yeah.
That's surprising.
So I was like, cool, you got a good writer in there. And you got a good visual director who knows how to work with VFX. You could have, and you have a really good cast. The only thing I will say about the trailer I didn't like is, my God, it does feel very MCU quippy. Like, is that a velociraptor? That's a velociraptor.
It's definitely gonna be a like 2025 movie, which is probably gonna make me not like it that much. But
what
I
do
will
you mean by that.
Just yeah, what
like
does that
the,
mean?
The way the dialogue,
like it's gonna feel
handled.
Very.
Like, it's not gonna feel. It's just not gonna feel very real. Like, there's not gonna be much real human emotion in there.
That mutant dinosaur reminds me of Skibidi Toilet.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of stuff nowadays, especially the really popular stuff, it's like, it's almost like they're afraid of like having characters with emotions. It's like everything has to be a joke, or I don't know, just very surface level, especially like Marvel movies and things.
Yeah, I get it. They don't want to have a genuine moment of like genuine emotion. They have to undercut it with a joke. Yeah.
Well, like,
I
if
put,
you think about
I
the first
Jurassic
Park
first out of all three of these, I think
I
that
too.
I don't make the most.
That's
funny.
What I was saying. I wrote a joke. This is spoilers for my upcoming video. I wrote a joke, and it was like, all right, who's going to be the big juggernaut of the box office of 2025? Will it be the Superman? And I go into detail talking about why it's so important. Or will it be Fantastic Four? And I go into detail why it's so important. And then I go, no, it's going to be the stupid fucking dinosaur movie. It's going to make $2 billion.
That's not true. It's going to be the stupid fucking blue people movie. Are y'all fucking out of your minds?
No, I'm talking about July, sir.
Okay, yeah. Alright, fine.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's...
Avatar's got him beat, bro.
James Cameron has deluded himself into thinking that Avatar is like awards contenders movies. So he's like, I'm gonna put it in the awards section of the year at the end, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he always does that. I've never been a massive Avatar fan either. I don't know.
I am not I would never like rate them super highly, but I will go see them twice when they come out. Like they're so like that's kind of spectacle I like, because it just feels like
really?
It's like. Yeah,
you
I
saw
love
A Way of Water twice. That fucking
I saw
three
Way of
hour
Water
long
twice,
movie.
Bro.
I saw it twice, but I wasn't happy about it. It's,
I enjoyed
it's such
it, man.
A dad ass movie. My dad wanted to see it, so I saw it the first time. I was excited for it, and then I walked out like, damn, this was so boring. It was just the first one, but everyone was wet. And then my dad was like, we got to go see it in 3D IMAX. And he was visiting. So we went and saw it again. And my goodness, sitting through that thing.
But like, that's like such a, that's like a, such a flat, like blast from the past, bro. Like going to see Spy Kids 3D in theater with the 3D glasses, being able to go see Avatar in 3D with the 3D. Bro, that shit was fun when I was a kid, bro. That shit was so cool.
Sure. Yeah.
I realized when I first saw, or when I rewatched Avatar, the first one, like in 2021, I was really drunk. I remember I shed a tear during the 9/11 scene in Avatar 1.
Honestly, the first Avatar is pretty solid. I really
that,
liked
I
the
mean,
first Avatar.
That totally it's was not... like an, it was like a 9/11 type of deal. Remember they crashed they blew up
they
the
even,
Tree of Life.
Yeah. Do you remember the when the tree's falling?
Yeah, it's really sad.
All right, yeah, well, what are we thinking?
If we want to get into our numbers, I'm going to start. What do we think? Are we all in agreement of what we think the number one earner is going to be?
Yeah, it's Jurassic World 100%.
It's Jurassic World.
I put Jurassic. All right, so Jurassic World, 1.2 billion box office.
That's what I said.
Total, and then 140 opening weekend domestic.
So I had the exact same worldwide, but I had a 200. But I had a 200 million opening. I think the opening will be higher because Jurassic World 1 had a worldwide opening of $500 million.
Oh my god.
That's Wait, insane. I thought we're doing domestic though.
We're doing domestic. We're doing domestic. I'm just saying, but that's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I have a 100 million opening weekend and a 1.2 billion worldwide because no matter what,
are
no
we
matter
all the same
bad,
fucking?
That's crazy. Yeah, no matter how bad the movie is and how bad word of mouth is, people just love seeing dinosaurs. So
it's something people can go take their kids to see too.
Yeah, like, even if it's a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, they have serious actors in it this time. We got Scarlett Johansson and Mahershala Ali. That'll do something, I think. Although I don't know. I feel like it won't make as much as the Chris Pratt ones. I don't think
so either.
Yeah, I don't know. I
can't put my finger on exactly why, but I feel like they're changing it up. It's going to feel like a reboot of a reboot, and I feel like people might be like, oh, I can miss this one. Some people
might
say
that.
It's funny
because it's going to feel like a return to form in a way because the original Jurassic or three Jurassic Park movies are all just about, we got to go back to another dinosaur island and survive on the island. And I don't know. I love those ones.
Yeah, wasn't there an Adam Driver dinosaur movie that just came out?
Yeah, that was called 65. It was a sci-fi.
Did you like it?
It was so
it
was
horrible.
So bad, bro.
It's so uninteresting. It really felt like Adam Driver wanted to have enough money to buy like a vacation home, so he did that movie. Yeah,
it was obscenely
it's
bad.
It's
like, I don't know how
it's 65 because it's 65 million years ago. Dinosaurs.
It felt like an After Earth situation with like.
It was. It yeah. That's a good. That's a pretty apt comparison.
How many dinosaurs were in it?
Like
quite a few.
Four. And they
just
all looked
four?
Horrible. They all looked
there was
hideous.
Just four, there was
like
just four
or five
dinosaurs. Oh my god.
Not like
a
few dinosaurs, like four different types of dinosaurs.
But
they all looked ugly and they looked like they looked like video game bosses.
Cuz I only really judge this movie on how many dinosaurs there are.
There's a pretty good amount of dinosaur in
when it comes to dinosaur movies, I'm quantity over quality. I just want to see a lot of dinosaurs and then I can go home feeling satisfied.
So what's the best kind of. So Jurassic Park 1 for you is terrible cuz there's like three dinosaurs.
Yeah, there wasn't. I didn't even finish.
There's
that
more
movie.
Than three dinosaurs, bro. There quite a few raptors.
There's like
in there.
Four.
I mean, this is kind of embarrassing, but I went to a Universal theme park when I was like 17, and I've always had a fear of like water dinosaurs. You know, like the ones that are like the plesiosaurs,
the long neck boys.
Yeah, like the ones that like what people think the Loch Ness monster is. Yeah, I've had a fear of them forever. So when I went on the Jurassic Park ride, I was totally fucking scared during that.
With the Mosasaurus.
Yeah, I did not like that. But yeah, so then after that, I have Fantastic Four making $1 billion in total, and then just over 100 million, like 110. Opening domestic. That's my number two. You probably have number two as Superman Gulliver, right?
No, I have Superman's number three for me. I'm still most excited for that one. But I have Fantastic Four as also number two. I have it number two as 130 million opening weekend and 850 million worldwide.
What about
you? I have 150 opening and then I have 850 million worldwide.
Wow, we're right. Oh my God.
It's interesting to me though, like that we all have Superman number three, because I feel like if you asked, like if you just polled 100 people, like name a superhero, I feel like the first superhero people would say would be Superman.
I feel like most people don't pay attention to like trends of box office though. Like it's not something that people pay that much attention to.
No, but I'm just saying just like on name recognition alone and iconic status, like I don't know, you have James Gunn who is a name director at this point.
Absolutely.
Who even general audiences I think know about beyond just like film people. And you got Superman who I think is like one of the most iconic characters in all of American
I will say
American
though,
fiction.
It seems like the reception to that trailer though has been pretty lukewarm for a lot of people.
I wouldn't say so. I'd say everybody I've talked to has said it's like, damn, that was a good ass trailer.
Everything I've seen, you get it. People I've talked to, like you and all that, have said they liked it, but a lot of people I've been reading online have just been shitting on it.
It doesn't. It kind of looks cheap to me in a weird way. Like
the color
grading. It looks a little bit oversaturated to me. Do you guys get that?
I think that's intentional. I'd rather have though.
It oversaturated. I think that's
yeah. I think they're trying to like really like go away from the James Gunn or the fucking Snyderverse shit. Like they're trying to make his story nice and bright and like family friendly.
I'm just
yeah, but it was giving me like Justice League vibes almost, like 27 Justice League. You know?
I mean, we'll see. I don't know. I think some of the color grading looks a little orangey teal. I read somewhere that James Gunn was basing it off of like 1970s color grading, like the old Donner Superman films. But I don't know. It didn't really bother me too much.
I think what we end up getting will look nice, but we'll see. I mean,
I'm definitely a big fan of Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane.
Yeah, that's
good. I think Amy Adams is an excellent actor too. So I feel like
she was just given squat to work with.
Yeah.
She had you think about like the casting of the Snyderverse was pretty fucking great though.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it.
I think so.
Did you guys like Henry Cavill as Superman? Like taking the movie quality out, just like think of him as in that role.
No, I think he could have been a great Superman if he had a different writer.
It's really hard for me to say just because like I don't feel like I ever got a like there was not even really any moments in those movies. Like he didn't have any shining moments for me. Like usually whenever what's his fucking name? Ben Affleck. Like Ben Affleck, as much as I don't really like him as Batman, he had some like moments where he like really felt like Batman. And I was like, okay, maybe if he had the right script, he could have been really good. But I didn't really get any of those with Henry Cavill.
No, Henry Cavill, I think he needs a really good director and a really good script to go off of. Because like, look at, he was great. And the only thing I've seen him in where I'm like, wow, he's genuinely good was Mission Impossible Fallout. And I think that was a combo of good writing and a good director working with him. Because Zack Snyder should, no offense to Zack Snyder, but I don't think he should write his own projects.
Wait, is that the famous contractually obligated mustache movie, the Mission Impossible
one? Yes, that is, which everyone knows about.
It caused the uncanny gate. Upper lip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Do you guys remember that? Like, they bring attention to it. That was the first shot of Justice League. Was him with his fucking
and he's
giant
even just like,
quivery upper lip.
Hey guys.
It didn't help that it was like mobile phone footage too. So just like also looked weird in general.
I saw someone there like it would have been better if they just put a Snapchat filter on his face for the opening scene.
For real.
Got like a mustache and a monocle on.
I mean, I'm the odd man out. I think the Snyder Cut was actually pretty good.
I know
you guys hate it, but
I don't hate the Snyder Cut. I don't think it's great or good even. But I will admit that after watching the first Justice League and going back to that, I'm like, God damn, this is fucking church, bro.
Yeah,
that first Justice League is an absolute stain.
I think it's definitely much more watchable.
Yeah,
it's a case of the stakes being so much lower. It's like a weird experiment in movie history, like a failed franchise that the director, just because of this weird set of external circumstances, like the pandemic and the giant like weird ass Snyder Cut movement, he got to actually get a bunch of money from the studio and finish his vision, which was like at the time it was like. It was just you didn't have to feel invested in it because you knew it wasn't going anywhere. But it was like, oh, this is actually like kind of a cool thing that we got to see.
I think they just know that if they didn't do it and it didn't work out, they like the DCU is fucked. Like I think they were just like, well, this this is not working.
Wait, so you think they? You think the Snyder Cut helped the future prospects of like James Gunn's DCU?
No, I think their hope would be that they wouldn't have to reboot it if it worked out well.
Well, I mean, the response of the Snyder Cut was really good, though.
Yeah, it was pretty positive. Even I at the time was like, you know what? Cool, let him finish this thing. I think general consensus was like, go for it. But, like, I don't know. Now I'm looking at it and I'm like, no, I don't think it's good. I don't think there's anything interesting there with the characters. I fucking hate Superman. Batman is a fundamentally broken version of the character. The Flash is a Hawaiian criminal.
Ezra Miller is good as the Flash, bro. Zionist. I'm gonna forever be backing my boy Ezra or my whatever
person.
My person Ezra, dude.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I mean, it seems like we basically have the same within like.
Yeah.
A
what are our numbers for Superman?
I'm at 140 million opening. 140 million opening. 750 million Worldwide.
Nick.
Are we the same?
I have the same worldwide, at least.
That's I went a little crazy. Higher. I think it'll make 900 million.
Okay. I'm hoping I am wrong. I'm hoping it does super well. I'm just guessing it's going to do close to Man of Steel numbers.
I feel like it'll do better than that.
You think
because
so?
I think they're gonna put a lot of money into promoting this movie, and I really do think that James Gunn's name holds a lot of weight with comic book film fans. I think it'll bring Marvel fans over that want to see what he's looking at it next.
I was kind of looking at it in comparison of Guardians and Man of Steel, sort of, and like I think until people kind of see where this new DC is going, I don't think they're going to give it as much like benefit of the doubt. Even if
I think
James
it'll
Gunn.
Take time to build, yeah.
Yeah, but it's
I think
not
it'll
like they
do
have nothing to work
well.
Off of. That,
like, but like the
we,
last
we
but
have
the...
some stuff that James Gunn's already made in the DCU, you know.
But you have to keep in mind, like a lot of people who go see these kind of superhero movies are not following all this backstory shit. They're not like, the reboot, this one's gonna be a complete reboot, blah blah blah. They're not like paying attention to
all
those
they
kind
know
of things
is
a lot of the
they're
time.
Doing another Superman.
They're like the last movie I saw was that Aqua Guy movie, and that shit fucking sucked. I don't know if I want to go see another one.
I think there's more people out there than you think. Like I think to actually be invested in this shit at this point, especially considering all the multiverse fucking weird shit, like you do kind of have to be invested in what the parameters of the fictional universe are. You know?
I get that, but I think for a movie to make over $1 billion, there needs to be a lot of people who aren't invested going to see it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it'll break a billion. I just think it'll do a little bit better than you guys are saying.
But. You know, I think I'm hoping. We get in the nostalgic people who all they need to do is hear dun, 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 and they go, that's Superman. Because, no, like Man of Steel, I mean, even in the title itself, Man of Steel, and then you see the Superman logo, but it's just Superman. It's got the Superman theme. It's got color. It's got Superman, and he's like very similar in tone to the Christopher Reeve version. I think you might get that old general audience crowd that's like, I love Superman. I want to go see a Superman movie, and this looks like something I would have watched when I was a kid.
Yeah, I can totally see that too.
I'm excited. It's of the three, I'm probably the most excited for it for sure.
Absolutely.
I just don't think it's gonna perform that well. I think people are gonna look back on it fondly if it works well.
But in
terms of comic consumption, you guys are more interested in DC, right? I feel like I've heard both of you say that.
I own DC,
like DC
comics.
Comics.
I don't
way more.
Own any Marvel comics.
That why is that? I'm curious.
Just the characters
just
are better.
I also think from what I've heard is from a lot of people that read comics is Marvel's just not as good with the comics in the last 10, 15 years. Like they're more focused on the MCU and not really pushing the comics artists as much. And also the comic artists kind of hate the MCU because they don't get any credit for anything or any cut of creating characters that they use. DC, like Superman comes out and James Gunn goes, this one's inspired tonally by All-Star Superman, Superman for all seasons. You can buy them right here and here. Go buy them. And then all of their comic stock went up and all the authors and creators of these books, like the new Supergirl movie they're coming out, that is an almost direct adaptation of Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, which I have on my shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also read a lot more grounded comics. Like I read a lot of graphic novels as opposed to like comics. And I think a lot of the DC characters are more like kind of believable characters, realistic.
I've always felt like it's the exact opposite, though. Because, I mean, if you think about it, like the touchstones of the Marvel Comics universe, not just on film, but like, I mean, their biggest character is Spider-Man. And Spider-Man is like the epitome of the everyman superhero.
Yeah.
Whereas like DC's Justice League is populated by like all these godlike heroes, problems and things like that. You know,
well, the three characters
power scaling is a huge difference too. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, that's why I didn't ever really read much Superman and stuff like that. I read characters like Hitman. I read like Batman. Like I read all like the Batman comics. Like I've read so many of them. But like Marvel comics, I think the best ones are like fucking Spider-Man, Daredevil, and probably Punisher Max.
Like, which are all
those are all pretty
people,
very grounded characters.
Yeah. I saw someone. I've heard people describe. They're like DC is about gods trying to be human, like Superman, and then Marvel is about humans being gifted godlike powers.
Yeah,
and I think
that makes sense. But I don't know. It's just like even in the way that, I mean, I think James Gunn is going to take a different interpretation of the Justice League once he gets to that in a couple of years or whatever. But like, if you take Snyder's interpretation of it, like that, people clowned him for like wanting to have all these like godlike parallels to Superman and everything. But isn't that's kind of baked into the concept of what Superman and a lot of the DC characters are? I mean, I think it's just the way
it was portrayed more so than the actual concept itself.
I think the most uninteresting thing you can do is compare Superman to Jesus Christ. I think if you're going to compare him to any religious figure, go off of Moses, because that's essentially what he was inspired by. The really? Biblical story of Moses, yeah. The two creators, I forgot their names. I think they said this somewhere that he was inspired by the story of Moses. I don't know. I'm hoping Superman does well. I really hope it does. I don't want this to flounder.
But what was your opening weekend prediction
for Superman?
Yeah,
110 million opening weekend, and then 750 million worldwide.
Yeah, I did 110 too.
Nice. I think VHS Nick got the same worldwide numbers on all three.
But I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm concerned a little bit that Fantastic Four is just unadaptable. Like, I don't think it really works on film for a number of reasons.
I don't think that's the case, man. I think
the movies are just bad, the ones we've had.
But yeah. they've tried three separate times in the past, 20, 30 years to do this, and it's failed pretty spectacular.
Every time. The last one was literally just like, first of all, they were all way too young. It was just like a weird like teen drama. And a shitty one at that.
Are you talking about Fantastic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think they're just going about it all wrong. All there is to it.
The main thing that Fantastic Forest fans say that was wrong about like the first two, like the Tim Story ones with Chris Evans, is that the Fantastic Four didn't feel like a family or something, which is, if you notice, like that's a huge part of the marketing around this one. Like, we're a family, yeah. Welcome to the family. Because, you know, they know the fans want to hear that, but it's like,
I don't know,
they did kind of feel like a family to me. Have you guys watched those movies at all? Like the older?
I don't mind them.
I saw them when I was younger.
I will say they nailed the fucking thing. The guy playing the thing is, like, from what I've seen in the trailer,
Bachrach.
He was so good. Like, he solely is the reason I'm excited to go see the movie.
Have you guys seen The Bear?
Yeah.
He's Richie from The Bear. Yeah.
He's a really big part of Girls too.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he's also an Andor really as well.
Yeah. Well, do you guys want to get into Chungking Express?
Yeah.
I'm down.
Sure.
So I guess I'll give a little bit of backstory to the movie, because it's kind of like what made me initially go check it out. So basically, like, the director was directing a film called Ashes. I forgot what it was called. Ashes of Time or something. Ashes of Time. And it was in post-production. He was waiting for post-production to finish on that film. So he brought in a few of the actors from that film. And he was like, let's make some small movie with no money. And then he brought in his director of photography. Forgot his name. What's his name? It was like a white guy, Christopher Doyle. And he brought him on, and everybody basically just worked for no money, and they just worked shot without permits on anything. And they spent almost no money making this movie. And they basically just, instead of making an original score, they just got like California Dreamin' and Dreams by the Cranberries. They just played them on repeat.
Yeah.
So basically they took every measure they possibly could to like cut costs and spend no money on the movie. So like, if you Google it, they'll say it costs $0 to make this movie, which isn't true, but it was incredibly cheap because nobody was taking any money for it.
That's cool.
What city is this supposed to be taking place in?
Hong Kong, right?
Yeah, it's in Hong Kong.
Oh, okay. See, like, I don't know enough about, I don't really know much about China at all, really, at any point in history. Some things, but I definitely don't know enough about it in the 90s. I feel like they must have been trying to say something with how the character, the one woman was like wearing a wig. There was like two characters wearing wigs. And then the girl who worked at the restaurant in the second story was listening to all these American songs. Like, there must have been some kind of comment they were trying to make about that.
But Hong Kong isn't like China. It's like a separate province. It's very, very Americanized as a country. So it's almost
very
like
Westernized.
Yeah, it's almost separate from all of China in a way.
Oh, okay.
Because it was, they were part of the UK, right?
Yeah.
I think so. And that just recently switched back, or it's about to.
I really enjoyed this movie, though, for the most part. I enjoyed the second half because it's two loosely connected stories. The second half was much more engaging to me. Although I didn't mind the first. I didn't dislike it really, but the second one grabbed me much more.
It really felt like whenever I was watching it, it felt like he started writing, and the first story inspired him to write the second story, because the second story almost tells the same story just in a much better way, and it kind of is more impactful.
Yeah, it's like cop or man of the law falls in love with someone in a very different
part, and you can tell because the second story is longer too. It's like an hour 10 minutes. The other one's like 30 minutes long. Minutes. So
it feels like a short film opening to a long short film.
Yeah,
and then his next movie, Fallen Angels, was supposed to be a part of this kind of anthology, right? Initially he wrote that to be the third short story within Chungking Express, but it just never, he didn't end up finishing it or something, or wanted to flesh that out more. But apparently he wanted to add a third story onto it. But yeah, generally I thought this movie is cool. It was a really cool depiction of how fickle love can be, you know, the little tiny things in your life, mismatching with someone that you might have a really strong connection with, but you know, it just doesn't work out for one reason or another. I really enjoyed that. There's not that many movies about that. Most romance movies are most ones that I've seen are very Hollywood, and people they'll persevere through all these kind of circumstances that in real life might make a relationship not work. But they, you know, they persevere because it's a movie. But in this movie, it's you don't really know whether they end up together. There's a lot of reasons why they might or they might not. But I appreciated that about this.
In the second story, basically, there's this girl who finds out this guy has, his girlfriend broke up with him, and she starts sneaking into his house, and she's basically just slowly removing all of the traces of his ex from his house, cleaning it up, making his place nicer while he's gone. And just fucking around, being kind of goofy.
Also deleting her voicemail.
Yep. Just basically all these little traces that make him basically think about her nonstop. I don't know if y'all have been through, I know you've probably been in a relationship since you were pretty young, Gulif. I don't know if you've been through like a breakup that just kind of sucked. But it can almost going through a really shitty breakup can almost feel like you're haunted. And there's little things that kind of give you like the chills or bring you back to that moment, right? In real life. And I think this movie depicted that in a way I haven't seen before. And I think it is one of those things where maybe you spent all of your time doing this one thing with this one person. So going to do that one thing, just triggers you those feelings again. And I think that cop was going through the same thing, right? And I think that's just really cool. I don't know how she's just kind of picking apart every little thing that makes him think about her and stops him from moving on.
And also she takes it as she kind of becomes more acquainted and learns more about him as she picks through all of his stuff. I just that little detail. It's almost like a parasocial relationship.
I also like how oblivious he is to her liking him too.
Why did she get so excited when she found the hair? Do you remember that part? She was searching in his bed for.
Well, I think she thought it was the other girls that kept flirting with him.
Yeah,
she was worried it was hers.
Oh, the one at the restaurant.
Yeah.
So she was just. But why did that make her so? She was
I think it was she found the final piece she was trying to get rid of. It was there's the last one.
Oh, that you're probably right.
Oh, okay. And also, I feel like I missed how did she flood his apartment with something with the fish?
That's
tank,
what
right?
I was thinking. I have no idea. Did she overfill the
confusing.
Fish tank?
I think I think it was just the shower flooded it, right?
But she had a bag of the fish. She had the fish in a bag.
Yeah,
that she gave back to him.
I don't know. It didn't really show it.
Yeah,
I think she left the shower. I think she left the shower on. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
because she was watering the plants in the bathroom.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was just doing anything to avoid being at work and just to be stalking this dude in his apartment.
Honestly, the passion she has for avoiding work is admirable.
One question I have: if this story was changed and it was the sexes were changed here, would we think this movie's okay?
Guys just walking around picking hairs off of this girl's bed. There you are. I mean, it's a little predatory.
I think it would maybe still be kind of endearing if they like. I don't know. It's hard to say.
It's just like, I mean, I don't know. I think as a guy, like, you have to be aware of, like, how imposing you can be just from, like, a standpoint of physicality, you know? Like, you being in someone else's space. I mean, you know, in the real world, if a girl was doing that to me, too, I would also call the cops.
Oh, yeah, it's horrifying.
It's really scary. Or trying to steal stuff.
No matter how cute of a short order cook she was, I would not fucking care. You know, I'd be like, you can't be doing this.
I'm calling the police. Or actually, I am the police.
I also like the cute, but
as much as we're downplaying the first story, I think it's really interesting, like the peach thing too, because I think we all do that kind of thing too, or not all everybody maybe, but like I do things where like. Yeah, not peaches, sir. The pineapple, sorry.
Yeah, call me by your name.
I was about to say, I have it all stuck in my head.
we all fuck the peach every now and then, right?
But, like, I don't know. I feel like everybody kind of, in their mind, puts a deadline on things. And I think it's just, like, a cool visualization of that. Like, there's a lot of cool elements to it.
It went from cans of pineapples to cans of sardines, right?
Yeah.
In the second story.
Yeah.
Yep. And she replaced all the labels.
I will say I do think we shouldn't entirely skip over the first section of the film, even if it was not as interesting. I still think we should discuss it because I do have some questions. What crime was she committing at the beginning of all those Indian guys?
She was smuggling drugs.
Yeah. Oh, was that what she was doing? Oh,
yeah, okay. That's why she was sending them over, because she had, remember, she was like filling the bags with coke and shit.
Yeah. Okay.
They were like hiding it in shoes and stuff. When he took her shoes off, I was like, oh, I wasn't sure if she like hid drugs somewhere in her high heels. I was like, oh, maybe he's going to find drugs. And then I was like, this isn't that kind of movie.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> that would be, if this movie was made in America, that's probably what it would be.
What did y'all think about the way it was shot? Like the like weird, like
the like slow frame rate
undercranked shots and stuff.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I really appreciated the cinematography. I thought it was really cool, and especially learning that you said it was shot on basically no budget, right?
Yeah,
and the performances were great too. Yeah,
well, they're all like really good actors. They were just like not taking a payment for it because they were basically like in between projects too.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was another thing. It was like I think Tarantino saw it like really early on, and he liked it so much that he like got Miramax to actually fund the distribution of it. So
yeah, it's interesting. I really like that shot that they get, because you get all that slow frame rate where everyone's like smear framing across, and then I really like, I don't know the characters' names, but the guy in the second part of the movie, where he's like leaning
across. The
second one
was Cop 663.
That's right, Cop 663. Where he's like leaning onto the jukebox and like slowly going to like fiddle with the jukebox while everyone around him is blurring. I just thought that, I was like, this could be like,
I don't even know how they did that on those.
They just had the frame rate had the frame rate really slow, and he was just moving very slow and not moving while he was pushing the button, and everyone was just walking past him. It's like a time lapse.
Makes
image.
Sense.
Yeah. I was also wondering how they did that. It was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, did you guys like the first story at all? Because now that I'm thinking about it, I don't really have even anything to say about it. It didn't really do much for me.
I liked it, but I think the reason I like this movie so much is I can very much like relate to the second story a lot. And I think the first story is just a less of a relatable story for me.
Yeah.
It felt like the first story ended right when it was starting. Like, I was like, oh, we're in the, you know, it's going to keep going, and it's going to escalate, and then it just kind of stops.
There wasn't really much emotional payoff on it. It was kind of just, like, him trying to, like, I don't even know. Like, I don't know how to describe, like, I don't even know what it was trying to get across. It's, like, him trying to, like, I'd have to think about it more.
I don't know. I think it was just, like, lovesick, could not find a date, and then finds this weird, mysterious woman who wears a wig and red glasses and is like super cold and distant.
And sometimes you just have to replace your heartache with cans of pineapples and things,
and then you puke them out because they're all expired.
Dude, he puked in a urinal.
That's all. I think that's like just a, I don't know, is that how their bathrooms work?
It looked like a urinal or like a piss trough. You know, like, usually like those like Irish pubs where they don't have urinals. It's just like a giant tub that everyone pisses in. There's like not even any courtesy, like partition.
Just a big hole. You guys gather around the pee hole.
Generally, I'm pretty positive on this movie, though, despite the fact that the first 20 minutes I was like not really very engaged, but then as soon as we got introduced to the second batch of characters, I was much more interested and engaged, and I thought the ending was really cool too, like when he gets the letter from her, and then he immediately just is like, oh fuck, just this throws, and like, it throws down. in the trash, and there's a quick cut to him, I assume, just coming back later because it was raining out, and he's like, I kind of want to see what that's at, you know.
He's like, I'm not gonna make the same mistake twice.
Yeah,
it's like, ah, oh, shit, I should go grab that.
Yeah, it shows his growth too. Running. Like that's the whole thing. I think the first story just lacked any kind of like personal emotional impact and also like character growth, really.
Yeah,
like,
there's no arc.
Like, yeah, the guy was like trying to like, I guess he's, I don't know. Like, I just don't. There's nothing to pull from it.
Yeah, when's the first time you saw this movie, Nick?
Like August of this year.
It's a recent watch.
This is my third time watching it.
August of this year or last year?
This year.
This year of 2025?
No, last year. Holy shit. Forgot it's a new year.
Yeah. Okay. That's why you recommended this, and I was like, really interesting. Okay, I didn't know if you like were into foreign films very much. But yeah.
I am.
This was a cool watch.
Mostly.
I didn't really... I think, honestly, either... Because the first one was kind of weak for me, the first half. I just keep wanting to say the first short film, because it feels like it would have been better if, for the benefit of the first portion, it would have been better if there were three short films in this entire movie. Because as it sits now, the second one just like overshadows the first one.
Yeah.
So much.
And if the concept was to show how like vaguely interconnected some of these things are, like they made a point to say like, oh, I got like 0.1 centimeters between her, and then they like stop the frame, and then right before the, you know, there's like the protagonist switch, he's like, oh, that's the closest I ever got to her before she fell in love with another man. Like, that to me, like, it's kind of conceptually half-baked a little bit, if that's the only narrative device that really, really makes these characters or these stories interconnected at all, you know? It's kind of like a weak device a little bit, but...
There's also the moment where you see the main girl from the second part leaving a store with a stuffed animal, and the girl with the wig and the red glasses, I think, is standing in front of the store, and that's, like, the only other time you see them interact in the same frame.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't hold it back too much for me just because of how much I got from the second half. And I think as just like on a visual standpoint and like just the acting, like everything is good in the first movie or the first part. It's like I don't have anything negative to say about it. I just don't feel like it resonated with me that much.
Yeah. Also, so there was two separate different women that were wearing wigs. Like the one guy that was dating the girl who they were speaking English, remember? And then he walked, the white guy that gets killed. That was a different girl in a blonde wig, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, but I thought she had taken one of the other girl's wigs.
She was still inside, like by the jukebox, when he goes outside and gets shot, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And why was
I think
shot?
She had taken it because like, he was one of the people that
kind of confusing to me.
Yeah, that was it ended, and I was like, okay, I don't really know what happened. I think it was they had all ripped her off as like the crime they were going to commit, so they all got paid and then ditched her. And then I think they all hid, or like either hid at that guy's and that guy's bar or something, or was maybe at least helped by them. And then they knew and maybe got a cut or something, because then afterwards, they like when she leaves the first time I've talked to them, and they're like, we don't know where they went. You see her like wink back at, or not wink, but like, you know, gesture to the guy behind the curtain. And then later they're playing with one of her wigs. And it feels to me like very mocking, like, haha, like, we got some money out of this. I don't know. It's just
I feel like the plot of this movie is definitely secondary to just making you trying to make you feel something for sure.
Yeah.
Which is another thing I like about it. It's like very emotion forward. Like,
Well, I think the second half strikes a nice balance between like feeling like a slice of life piece and also just feeling like a plot and characters that you can get invested in, you know?
Yeah.
The first one was very slice of life to the point where I wasn't really engaging with it very much at all. But the second part definitely had me a little bit more because it didn't feel like overly narrative or plotty or anything like that. But it definitely, you know, there was cute story beats and stuff, and like cute romance things where she's, you know, sneaking into his house. And then when she gets caught with the fish and like all that stuff, it's all great, you know.
Yeah. The cute romance stuff where she breaks an entry and then.
Yeah. Typical love story.
On paper, it doesn't make sense, but somehow it works.
It's funny because on paper, looking at, if I described the two plots to somebody, they would almost always say, well, I bet the first one's more interesting because it's like a cop falls in love with like an underworld boss who runs a drug ring. And then in the second one, it's some cop falls in love with a girl at a sandwich shop.
Yeah, I feel like almost showed a little bit too much restraint on that. Like, why even have these two characters that are like diametrically opposed societally and not have them interact in that way at all? He doesn't ever find out that she's a drug runner. She doesn't even know that he's a cop. It's like, why even have them meet if you're not going to play with that at all? You know?
I think the whole point is basically him seeing that like relationships are fleeting for the most part, and like, you never know what's going to really happen. Cause he's like, I think the whole thing is like, he's like trying to like find meaning constantly. Like he's like constantly reaching out to people, trying to find somebody to like spend his life with. Talk about how he's like been on the earth for a quarter of a century. I think he just felt
he's
like time is ticking.
Existential dread.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think
that's why that's why he keeps,
I think
like
him finding
people
out
up and like, hey, I haven't talked to you in forever. Oh, that was 5 years ago and I'm married now. Oh shit.
Yeah, cool. I think him not finding out was the point, right? Like he didn't know anything about her and he's just like, oh, okay, here's another one just gone.
Well, but then he also was like, I'm just always going to remember her because she said happy birthday to me. So there was some impact she left on his life.
Well, the only reason he's going to remember her is because he didn't get the full picture, you know? Like, that's how life goes sometimes, right?
She's
you
a have, mysterious like, the, woman I met at the bar. The,
yeah, exactly. Like, you have that perfect image because you never got to see the bad parts.
So I know that this wasn't a Japanese film, but did that first guy have otaku vibes or whatever?
I don't think he was a sweetie pie. He seemed nice. I just wish the first one was like had more, you know. It feels like as it was getting started, it kind of just wrapped up and moved on to the more interesting story. But I just wanted something. I wanted a little more confrontation, a little more of an arc, a little more of something with the characters.
I don't really feel that way. It feels very intentional. It feels like that was exactly what he was going for. Because, I mean, it makes sense in context of the story for it to just end with no kind of like resolution or understanding, really, because that's basically what the guy's feeling, right? The way we feel at the end of it is how the main character feels.
Yeah, that's true.
That's fair. It didn't entirely click with me, and I think I'm split down the middle by being wanting it to be one or the other in types of film.
I can
still
understand
like
both sides
though.
This is like a nice little preface for the real movie, you know.
It's like a little opener, a little short film. It's like the little Pixar short films you see before you go watch Inside Out 4.
Do they still have those?
I don't know.
Is this like one of your favorite romance movies ever, Nick?
Probably.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, like this or Blue Valentine up there.
Or Blue Ruin.
Blue Ruin.
Velvet. But I love Blue Ruin.
What's the best Blue movie?
Perfect Blue. I haven't seen
Blue Ruin for sure, bro.
Yeah, Blue Velvet, Blue Water, the Blue Man Group. There are a bunch of movies
that are just called Blue. Blue 2002, Blue 1993, Blue 2018, Blue 2017, Blue 2009, Blue 2021. They keep going. Yeah,
wait, Blue Ruin's really one of my favorite movies ever. So.
I just looked it up on Letterboxd. We
need to get Jeremy Saulnier on here, bro.
I bet we could get him on. We'll get him and Chris Stuckman on the same episode. Do a collab.
I don't want to spoil the episode, bro.
I know. We don't want to have that guy ruining Chris's time.
Yeah.
Nick, are you still planning to make the romance video that you were telling us about a while ago?
The romance. Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
What was the concept for that again?
Yeah, yeah, give us the breakdown of the
idea. It was basically just I wanted to make a video that kind of talked about how romance isn't necessary. Like, what do y'all think? Do y'all think like romance is like for a specific gender, or does it have to be?
Let me preface this by saying I know we are two white guys and an Italian man talking about women and romancing them. So this can turn real bad real quick, but we're gonna tread carefully.
Yeah.
I think the issue with romance made for men versus romance made for women, I think men kind of look at love differently, and I think we look at it more in terms of like how having a woman basically makes our life more complete and like basically how that makes us feel, as opposed to like, at least to how it's portrayed in media for women, it's like the big romantic gestures, they want that like that high, right? Those like big feelings that the movie gives you, right? When somebody stands outside with a boombox and starts singing your name, or runs to the airport and stops you from leaving town, right? They care about that more as like a man's like, I just want to feel like my life has meaning.
Yeah, I think it's just dependent on the person. I don't know if it's entirely gendered, honestly. I think if a woman or my wife came outside my window with a boombox, not now, but like, I mean, that'd be great now. That'd be cool. But like, if, for example, in those scenarios, it's the same thing. It's like to make you feel appreciated or whatever, or to make you feel like that, you know, they care deeply about you versus, you know, a missing part of you, that final puzzle piece that you've been waiting for. I think it's not exactly gendered like at all. I think it's just universal, but it is in different shades, if that makes sense, you know.
I'm thinking about it more in terms of what they expect from a film, right? Like I think one is more relatable for the other in terms of what they're seeing on screen, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think Nick's definitely right in that there definitely is a whole genre of romance movies that are specifically marketed for and towards women, you know. Whether it's definitely not exclusively women that watch them. I think just like when the studio or whoever is making them is crafting the marketing and, you know, the story itself, I think they're thinking of women as like the target demographic for a lot of these movies. Like, I don't know, The Notebook and The Time Traveler's Wife or The Lake House or The Holiday, you know, shit like that. But then I think there are also movies that maybe, like, I think Her would be a good example of like maybe a more male centric romance movie, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe
that was one of my examples in the script I was writing.
Maybe because the main character is the only two main characters are a male human and a female computer, so maybe that makes it more interesting for a guy to watch. I don't know. But
that. It's basically just how aimless and in despair the main character was before he found her, right?
Yeah.
She basically like led him to like feeling normal, right? And I think that's like a feeling men can relate to more than like, because like if you look at like a lot of romance movies that are made for women, it's like the women are fine before they find the man. They're chilling, right? It just makes their life better when they find the man, right?
Yeah.
They're chilling with their girls. They're having fun, whatever. Whereas like in these romance stories for men, it's like the men are like struggling.
Like right? The 40-year-old virgin.
Yeah.
Like it's, the 40-year-old virgin, he like in his own world he's doing okay, but for everyone else he's like a weird 40-year-old guy who's never had sex and collects a bunch of action figures, you know.
In a lot of, it's interesting, in a lot of like male centric or like male centered or centered around men stories about romance in specifically movies, just look at where like the creation of the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which is designed to be this magical woman that appears and changes a man's life and helps him learn a lesson and then leaves his life and just gives him, basically is there to make him, you know, appreciate something or, you know, learn to grow, and then fucks off. Like, it's designed to be like this wish fulfillment of like, I want to meet a mysterious woman who makes me feel good. And then, you know, and then I learn like 500 Days of Summer or Perks of Being a Wallflower, stuff like that.
Yeah. But I mean, in 500 Days of Summer, like the manic pixie dream girl, she's the one who does get fulfillment. I mean, he learns something by virtue of him, of that girl being in his life, I guess. But like, he didn't get the girl, you know, like she didn't actually end up loving him. So I think she fulfills that archetype, but I never really understood why people like lump that movie in particular in with like the negative stereotype of the manic pixie.
I think that movie was handled really well.
I wouldn't say negatively. Maybe that's just because it's Zooey Deschanel and she's like the archetypical manic pixie dream girl cast.
Honestly, with Zooey Deschanel, I think her early in her career, she had a lot of decent performances too.
Yeah, like The Happening.
No, not like The Happening. What was it? It wasn't Rockstar. It was Almost Famous, right? And she was pretty good in that.
Oh yeah, she's like the big six sister in Almost Famous, right? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's good in that.
Well, yeah, that was basically what my video was about. Just trying to understand, like, first of all, talking about movies that like both women and men could find enjoyment out of, especially because it was leading into Valentine's Day, and then just kind of talking about what the difference is and what men and women want from their romance films. Which, if there's any women watching, please comment and let us know, like, what are the things that actually are fulfilling for you in romance movies, because we could be completely wrong.
Yeah,
I really love the idea that you think women are watching our podcast.
They could be.
I would love if they would. That would be great, but I just don't expect that.
The only time I had like more than 15% of women watching a video of mine was when I did like a true crime type of story.
Spooky and then
it
stuff. Yeah,
it was like over 50% women, which I thought was 15%.
15% is good, bro. Did you say 15?
Yeah, anytime it's over 15, anytime it's over 15, it's just like media stuff that I do. But when I was doing the spooky content for a while, that was more women were watching.
Mine's around 12, and I'm proud of that.
Oh no, now I'm concerned mine's going to be the worst. Oh no, because I don't talk about like, I don't, oh boy.
Yeah, I don't talk about like Marvel shit and all that kind of, or like anything.
Yeah, that's normal. I'm gonna have like all the 12-year-old boys in my
Yeah, I don't have anybody under the age of 18, or I don't have any under 18 in my analytics. It's wild.
Weird.
It's because I'm old. But yeah, what do y'all have any like thoughts? Like, what are your favorite romance movies?
The one that I recommended for the podcast this month is When Harry Met Sally, which I think is like totally a normie movie, but it's
a great movie though.
It's really, I think it's one of the best, if not the very best, like rom-coms ever made. It's just such a tight script. It's like one of the perfect examples of those movies that don't get made anymore, like this type of just very, very original script. Not, you know, it's not an original story, but it's an original, you know, original script with very tight acting, just an amazing, amazing vibes, you know, altogether. I think it's a really great movie.
Yeah, look at it in like the same vein as like Groundhog Day. Like they both feel very similar in terms of like how well they're written and like just how well the story flows, and just like the performance of the time. Like it's crazy. Like, I mean, acting's changed over the years, like the way people actually portray roles, because definitely people were way more over the top back then. But like, in some ways, it worked better. But it can't be done nowadays. It's like, I made a video, like I just released that sitcoms video, and like all the performances in like Third Rock from the Sun, which is the show I was shilling, are like so obscenely over the top. It's like, it's almost like straight up theater performances. But it works so well. And I kind of wish there was a way to make stuff like that work nowadays. But things are just gotten so downplayed.
I mean, what do you guys think people are really saying when they say like, oh, they don't make them like this anymore?
I think they're watching just exclusively Hollywood stuff.
But there isn't really like, there aren't really big performances like that very often. Like you have like random performances by Nick Cage being a weirdo, but like, how often do you see people like making a really big performance these days?
I mean, Lily Rose Depp, that was a really big performance.
Yeah, that was a big performance. That was great. That's true. Willem Dafoe's not afraid to get crazy out there.
Yeah.
There's a few. I think it just depends on what the tone is. Like, if you have the right director.
I think that's part of why I like the Please Don't Destroy movie so much, is just because those, they weren't trying to like be good actors. They were trying to be funny. And I think it really, like, whether it hit for you or not, like, I think it just kind of stuck with me. Like, it was kind of like a flashback to like comedy of the past.
I'm a big fan of, in a bittersweet way. How do you guys feel about Marriage Story?
I really like Marriage Story.
Speaking I didn't finish
of big
it.
Performances. You didn't finish it?
Oh, man. I got kind of bored, I'm not going to lie.
It picks up in the last third. But that's one where I'm like, I can always appreciate romance films when they just fully go into the, like, listen, it's not going to be a happy ending for everybody. Sometimes you just have to move on, but you can still appreciate a part of that person. And I really appreciate stories like that. And I think Marriage Story especially goes out on a really nice note like that.
Yeah, there's so many great moments in Marriage Story. Like, I mean, you know, I think it's probably much more impactful if you've actually been through a divorce, which I haven't. But I love the scene where Alan Alda is like telling Adam Driver's character this really long, convoluted joke, and Adam Driver's just like looking at the clock because he's paying for time with this guy, and he's like, "I'm sorry, am I paying for this joke right now?" Do you remember that scene?
Yeah, I do. There's just a lot of funny, like really naturalistic moments where you're like, you don't think about how that would work in real life. Like when they're serving him papers and like the sister is doing it, but she's still like friends with him, but she's like been told she has to serve him papers. So she's like, you've been served, and just real awkwardly slides it over.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because especially Scarlett Johansson.
They love
parents,
him.
Yeah, they were like, why are you doing this? And they yeah, like, still wanted so to have a relationship with him. Yeah, all of Noah Baumbach's movies, actually. I think he's a really good director.
What was the one? I haven't seen everything he's done. But I really like, there was one with Adam Sandler.
He's done the Squid and the Whale.
It was the Meyerowitz Story from 2017.
Oh, yeah, the one with Ben Stiller?
Yeah, Ben Stiller Dustin and Adam Hoffman. Sandler. I liked that one. It wasn't as good, but I really liked it. Marriage Story is great, though.
He's married to he's married to Greta Gerwig.
He's married to the Barbie.
I have a quick thing. So, have y'all noticed over the past like maybe 6 months or so, trailers have been getting a little better? Am I crazy?
No. I mean, I think we've had a few solid ones, but we've still consistently had very bad ones.
What are you thinking of?
Did y'all see the trailer for the new Final Destination movie?
No,
it was fine.
It was really good to me. I really liked it, and they just set up an entire kill, didn't give us any plot, and they set it to the music like perfectly. That was fucking badass. And then also the new 28 Years Later trailer was really, really fucking good.
Yeah, that was a great trailer, actually.
The new Seth Rogen, Johnny Knoxville thing that you sent me last night was really, really funny.
It's that new show where Seth Rogen is a studio exec, and they're basically like, I don't know the context, but it's basically just trying to like basically make fun of like these big studios and how they run.
It shows you that them just like watching a trailer for the movie they're making, like in the universe of the show, and it's a movie where it's a zombie apocalypse, but the way that the zombie virus is spread is by the zombies like doing explosive diarrhea on the humans.
What's the actor's name? Josh Hutcherson. He just gets coded in like zombie shit. And he's like, "Am I done for?" Like, Johnny Knoxville's like, "Yeah," and he just fucking kills him.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like as they're going around the room, like, "Is this gonna play well in China?" Like, I don't really know. And Johnny Knoxville's like, "I know, we have to get the explosive diarrhea in, but I really wanted to make a movie about misinformation in the medical field and all that stuff." it's
really fucking funny.
And I actually heard that Martin Scorsese is in that show and plays himself.
That's really good.
Yeah.
We need more Marty acting roles.
I love Marty showing up in movies.
They have a lot of real life people playing themselves in that show.
Did y'all see the like very much like Entourage? Did y'all see it was a long time ago. The Martin Scorsese trailer, it was like Walgreens commercial or some shit. I don't remember what it was. But he gets his like pictures from the whatever the kiosk where they like give you your pictures from your little disposable camera. and he's just going through, and he's like, too violent, too fucking blah blah blah, too blah. And it's like his nephew's like birthday or something.
He
calls his son and calls his nephew. He's like, we're gonna have to redo your birthday. It was like his performance, and it was really funny.
Was did good, you guys though. Like Killers of the Flower Moon?
No, not really.
I liked it. I don't know if I'd ever watch it again though. It's a big ask to watch it, but I liked it.
I loved it watching it the first time, but I agree with you that I don't know how much replay value it has. Whereas like the movie he made right before that, The Irishman, which is just as long, but I rewatched that movie
that probably one's like got twice, more rewatchability
twice a year
to me.
Probably. Yeah. I love The Irishman. I honestly think The Irishman is one of his best movies.
The problem with The Irishman is there's like three better mob dramas that he's made that I could just go watch instead.
I don't even know if that's true though.
I think it's more of a meta appreciation for me.
The scene where fucking Pacino and Tony Pro are arguing about being late, like,
I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's
like that is one of the best scenes in a Martin Scorsese movie.
Who's the guy who's in the Hawaiian shirt all the time? That actor? He's so fucking funny.
Yeah, Tony Pro. He was the guy from. Yeah. He's British. He was in like Boardwalk Empire and shit.
Yeah, he's from like, a lot of Guy Ritchie movies.
Is incredible. And
yeah.
the movie has
its most shining moments.
People didn't like the aging makeup and everything, and it looks ridiculous at points, but I just don't care. It doesn't bother me at all.
I would honestly say I liked Flower Moon more probably than
there were parts where De Niro in Irishman is like curb stomping someone, and his like he's supposed to be like 31, but he's moving like a 74-year-old.
Yeah, it's just a little weird. It's like
but it never took me out too much.
Just anytime he has to do anything, like even when he's just like he's like throwing the gun, he's doing like T-Rex arms, and then
they could have just gotten another actor to fucking do the role and then put his face on it. It would have been so much better.
He could have just called up Leo probably.
Yeah.
Hey Leo, you mind doing this one for free?
What about Nolan? What's your guys' favorite Nolan movie? We never really talked about
Nolan.
I
just watched Inception for the first time since I was 11.
What did you
think? I only really like one Nolan movie.
What's that?
The Prestige.
I need to rewatch Prestige. I think I've seen I've not seen Memento. That's the only one I haven't seen.
I've seen every one of his movies.
Memento's good.
I liked, what was his first movie? His like zero budget movie called? I forgot the name of it. I forgot what it was called. I think it's like Something Follows or no, I don't remember. But that one was pretty decent. And then Memento is cool, but like it's one of those things when once you watch it once, it's like meh.
It's lost the
And then same thing with like Inception. Like once you like kind of go through that movie once and you revisit it, it just loses all value. And then I don't know, Interstellar, same thing. When I watched it in theaters, I was like, oh my god, that movie was fucking amazing. And I went to go watch it back at home and I was like, oh, I fucking hate this shit.
I really like Interstellar.
Yeah, I felt that way watching it
a few months ago.
When I watched Interstellar for the first time, I was in my early 20s and I was like, this is so corny, like the power of love transcending through a black hole or something and allowing this guy to enter some tesseract or whatever. I thought it was very cheesy. And like Anne Hathaway's monologue about how the power of love is the only observable constant in the universe, where I thought all that was very corny. But then when I watched it recently, I was like, for some reason it hit harder to me. I think I've gotten more sentimental and more spiritual.
I think that's the same thing. I've become less bitter.
Yeah.
It just sucks because like Matthew McConaughey is so fucking good in it. And
he makes me cry every time I see that 23 years later scene.
Yeah, it's really good. That movie has really good moments in it. And it's like really pretty. Like I just can't get into it. But The Prestige is a perfect movie, so I'll never hate on Nolan too much, because he literally has a 10 out of 10 movie.
I don't remember anything about
Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is like a 6 for me.
The only big ones I have not seen are, I have not seen Oppenheimer, I have not seen Memento, I have not seen Dunkirk yet, and I have not seen, that's it.
I'd be curious on your take on Oppenheimer.
What? Gulov?
I mean, I think he did a bad job by letting that guy build the nuke, but
facts.
The funny thing about Inception is like it's a movie all about dreams, but it's the, like, since Christopher Nolan is such a, he's such a, like, clinical, sterile sort of filmmaker, you know, like his movies are so, they're so exacting, but there's not a lot of soul to them really, especially in terms of like production. Yeah. Like, it's like, it would be if like the architect of like the most boring apartment complexes in New York City, you were able to go into his dreams. Like, that's what Inception is, you know?
It's very much like a similar directing style to like Clint Eastwood, where like he's not really trying to get the most out of his actors at any point in time, which I think is why Christopher Nolan's really lucky that like great actors want to work with him, because he doesn't have to put as much effort into them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think Nolan is much more of a technical filmmaker than Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood is just like, I feel like he's just like, let's get it done. We'll get it done under budget. We'll shoot it. We'll do two takes.
Home early.
Yeah.
He's but Nolan like does that too. There's like, you can see like not where like a lot of his, you can see where a lot of his scenes falter, where he could just literally reshoot it one more time, but he doesn't. He's known for having very few takes on his shots as well.
I've heard that Nolan will spend like entire days on just like a single scene where other directors would get it done.
Yeah, he
like
doesn't give me the impression that he's lazy at all.
I don't think he's lazy. I think I think it's what I was reading about is specifically like his fight scenes and stuff. He just likes to get them done.
His fight scenes. He is not good at shooting hand to hand combat. My goodness, The Dark Knight Rises was some of the worst action scenes I've ever seen, excluding like, I don't know, even the, all the like CG stuff in Dark Knight Rises is not well shot. It's pretty rough. Well directed. It's really rough. It's so bad.
He was really wrangled into doing that last one though. I think the studio like pushed him into doing that. I think because he wanted to do Interstellar. They were like, it was like one for me, one for them kind of
well,
thing.
Well, I thought that's what he did, because he did Batman Begins. They wanted The Dark Knight, so he's like, I'll make Inception, and then I'll make The Dark Knight. Did that come out before or after, though? Am I getting those
Inception
mixed up?
Was after The Dark Knight.
Oh, okay. So he made Dark Knight.
Yeah, Interstellar was after Dark Knight Rises, though. That was a year after. Okay.
I didn't even mind Dark Knight Rises. I mean, I was just so invested. I did, recently. I mean, it's one of those things where I was so invested in the series at that point, I was just like, fuck it. Like, whatever it is, I'll enjoy it.
But you know, I mean, Tenet sucked for me, you. I don't know if you guys like Tenet, but I thought that movie was awful.
Tenet was ass.
My wife and I saw Tenet in a. This was during COVID, so we're all masked up. Nobody was in the movie theater. We were watching it probably about an hour in, and we're just like, "What the fuck is going on? Why is everyone backwards?" we had a whole scene of them explaining it, but I don't really know. Why is Robert Pattinson's going back? Oh, there's an emotional moment happening, but I don't know what the hell's happening.
I can't understand what they're fucking here. Saying.
What the hell is he saying? Oh my god, the audio mix is so dog shit. Oh, thank god it's over.
Yeah, no, it was like people talk about the Christopher Nolan exposition problem, which is most apparent, I think, in Inception, kind of in Interstellar, but horribly in Tenet. Like, I was actually laughing when I first watched it. I was like, I can't believe this is how he's deciding to tell this story. Like, you just have entire minutes of the movie are just Robert Pattinson and the main character guy. I forget what his name is.
It took me three goes.
Describing the way the shit works. I'm like, is this fucking serious?
Three goes to get through that movie. And the only reason I gave it so many shots is because my friend was just telling me, you need to watch it, bro. You need to watch it, bro. And then I watched it and it was not worth it.
The problem with that is I'm like, Inception is a similar movie in terms of that it's a sci-fi modern day film. But the thing is, Inception is not this great, it's a cool idea, but it's not incredibly incomprehensible. It's, we made a machine where you can go into people's dreams and interact. And then what if you go in their dream and you start dreaming while you're in their dream and you build off of that? Tenet is, guys, so imagine if there's like some matter and bullets and they move backwards. And then you move backwards, and then you're moving backwards, so you have to breathe in nitrogen, so you don't breathe out oxygen. And then your car is driving backwards, and you're fighting a forwards man while you're going backwards, man. And then you're going to intersect in your life at some point. And what? Yeah, it doesn't matter how many times you explain it, it's not going to make it cool to me.
Yeah,
I mean, hopefully he learned a lesson from that, and that like people aren't fucking just looking for the weirdest shit possible. They just want a good movie.
I'm fine with weird stuff. He just didn't do a good job at letting the audience understand.
And then, well, I don't know. He bounced back big time, though. I know you hate Oppenheimer, but most people really love that movie. I mean, it swept at the Oscars. I think it was the best movie of 2023. I mean, Ethan, you should really watch it. It's really good.
On my list. I'll get through all of this stuff. I'm going to a Hans Zimmer orchestral concert at the end of the month, and a lot of Nolan's music is playing. So
he's conducting. He's going to be there.
No, it's just going to be some other orchestra playing, but they're going to be playing all of his like big hits, and a few of them are from Nolan films. So the only one I have to watch now is Dunkirk, because that's the only one I haven't heard that's playing.
There's a lot of really great music in Dunkirk too.
I read somebody say recently, I don't know if it was one of you two or just some random person on like Twitter, but they're like, fucking, the thing about Inception is, why is everybody having such boring ass dreams?
That was my review. I said these people are having some lame ass dreams. Yeah.
Why the fuck? That is true though.
They're like, dude, I had this dream last night where I was at a cafe. Dude, I had this dream where I was at an office building.
Yeah, it's insane. I had a dream where I was just in a plane, chilling.
It was in a plane. And then one guy's like, I had a dream where I was going to a military base. It's like, okay, so you played COD.
He's like, I had a dream where I was an old man eating rice. Remember that? That was the very the opening of the beginning. It's just Leo wakes up on a beach and goes to talk to an old guy who eats rice.
It's similar to how you like the Nightmare on Elm Streets. Why is the dream world always just red dust world?
I don't know. At least Nightmare on Elm Street, they get fucking crazy with it sometimes, especially in the later films.
Yeah, for sure. It's just funny because it's like, this is not what my dreams look like.
My God, Nolan's got to have the most boring dreams. You go in his head, it's like Patrick from SpongeBob. He's just writing on a thing, but instead he's sitting at his desk. He's like, I'm having a dream about writing. My pen ran out of ink. Do you have another pen on you?
No. I had a dream that I had a really good telescope.
I still feel like The Sopranos depicts dreams better than anything I've ever seen on screen.
Well, I think when you get surreal with it.
Not like visually necessarily, but just in the way the characters interact with each other, it feels very dreamlike.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to get surreal when it comes to dreams, because dreams don't really make sense. Whenever you make dreams make sense, that's going to be a problem for you.
Yeah. I think Inception works for the dreams. The dream sake of how they explain stuff, or they're like, I really like the opening scene with Elliot Page, or not the opening scene, the scene with Elliot Page and Leo sitting at the cafe and being like, well, in dreams, you never know, you just kind of start in the middle of the dream, that's all you remember.
Yeah.
Think about it. Do you remember getting here? And then that's when everything starts crumbling because you're like, we're dreaming right now. I thought that was really cool. Because that's how dreams feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Boring ass dreams.
I mean, I feel like. Altogether, though, Inception didn't really age well for me. I also watched it a couple days ago, and I was like, this movie is kind of dumb.
Like what?
I don't know. Just the entire concept of it is kind of silly when you think about it. They never explain, I mean, you know, not that they necessarily have to, but it's just so quickly explained, like, oh, this was a device that dream sharing was developed by the CIA to try to... I don't even know, like, for what? Like,
extract
why would they
extract information from people?
Yeah, I guess so. But it was like that. That was kind of silly to me. The entire plot line of them like trying to go into this guy's dream and make him have a realization about his father. It's almost like a kind thing that they were trying to do. You know, like the Inception plot, where like ostensibly they're sort of fucking with this guy, but really what they're ultimately what they do is make him have this realization or understanding of like a better way to contextualize his relationship with his father, which is, it's like, wow, you guys are badass criminals. You know, it's not really
such
cool.
Passionate criminals.
Yeah.
I think Nolan's biggest fumble is, did y'all watch Westworld?
No, I watched first season and I could not finish. I could not get into it.
Well, no, that's what I mean. The first season, like as a whole, is like a fucking masterpiece of television.
I thought that was
it's
his
so
brother.
Goddamn.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was involved with that.
I think they both wrote the first season, and I think his brother directed it. But like that movie, how did the fuck did it fall off a cliff so hard? Like it had like the perfect setup, Westworld.
Yeah,
like the first season. The first season was actually a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Didn't Jesse Pinkman showed up in it eventually? Didn't he?
in like season three, and then it got canceled. Yeah, they were gonna do four, I think. Yeah, I don't know. It. I've heard a lot of people say this. I don't know how true this is. Like if it there's any water, if it holds water, but Nolan's brother, Jonathan Nolan, used to co-write on like almost all of his projects. So like The Dark Knight, The Prestige, Interstellar. I think specifically Interstellar was the last project that was co-written by both of them. And from then, it's just been Nolan, I think. I may be wrong. There might have been someone else. But he usually collaborates. There's even that quote where Christopher Nolan says, like, the line from The Dark Knight, you either live long enough to see yourself, or you either die a hero, or you live long enough, yourself become the villain. Yeah. And he's like, that line haunts me because I didn't write that. My brother wrote that. I think
collaborative art with his brother. Yeah, I think his stuff was better. Like his earlier stuff was way better written.
I think they bounced off each other really well.
Did he write Oppenheimer?
Christopher Nolan did.
Written directed by Nolan.
Yeah, I thought Christopher Nolan's never directed somebody else's. Script. I thought it was.
I don't know, bro.
I gotta watch it, and we'll talk.
It's long, but it's really it's long and it specifically
avoids a lot of things that people would find interesting, and it finds it. It's literally he needed somebody to like I think that's where his brother probably stepped in, where he's like, look, dude, this is only interesting to you. You're the only you find this interesting.
Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Oppenheimer made so much money in 2023 and won like 10 Oscars.
That's because it was right after fucking COVID. Nolan.
What the fuck is that?
It was Barbenheimer. Most anticipated movies.
I'm saying that the things that were focused on in the movie are not the things that general audiences give a shit about. He had way too much focus on a lot of fucking dog shit. Boring fucking shit that nobody cared about.
Oppenheimer made so much money.
$976 million
It was like
worldwide.
The first release after fucking all the COVID restrictions fucking came out. And it was like the first real movie.
It came out in 2023. The COVID restrictions were done by
end of 2022.
Yeah, but no movies were coming out for the longest period of time.
Dude,
no good movies.
Spider-Man No Way Home came out in 2022, I think. Spider-Man No Way Home made like $1.4 billion or something in 2021.
And Batman came out, made like
I'm wrong and I just hate Nolan, okay? Leave me alone.
I think that's what we found out here.
I did fucking hate that movie.
Yeah, we gotta watch this so we can talk about it.
Yeah, we should talk about Oppenheimer.
I'll give it a fresh
rewatch. Wasn't there a post-credit scene where Einstein shows up and he goes, fine, I'll do it myself.
Einstein isn't it.
I know.
And Robert Downey Jr. plays Dr. Doom, sort of. He kind of is Dr. Doom in that movie, if you think about it.
Do you guys think Robert Downey Jr., Dr. Doom, is going to show up in Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
I can see
they're going to do like
even if it's a
credit scene, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm really curious to see how they pull that off.
Yeah.
I fucking hate I've said it since I've read the casting. I hate the casting, bro. Why?
I think it's going to be a one and done. It's because he's Robert Downey Jr. But I think they're going to do one and done, do the big Avengers thing, and then he's never going to play.
No,
Dr.
not the Robert
Downey
Jr. casting. I don't even hate that much. I hate fucking the Mr. Fantastic casting.
That's the only one where I'm like, eh. But he's a good enough actor. I'm sure he'll make it work.
Yeah, I think he can be versatile. I think he's more versatile than you're giving him credit for, Nick.
Yeah, you don't want him to be stretched too thin.
Nah.
He doesn't come off as smart, dude. Mr. Fantastic is smart. Like literally Jim from The Office felt like a better Mr. Fantastic for me.
No, that felt like Jim from The Office was wearing a stupid ass blue rubber condom.
I would have rather had Jim from The Office.
This guy right here, his power is talking. So better not mess with his mouth.
That was a writing issue. His character decisions made no sense.
I don't get that casting, fan casting. I don't understand why people like that.
There's just that one Photoshop of him with a beard and like the Fantastic Four thing.
And
he does
when
he has a beard, he does kind of look like most depictions of Reed Richards in the comics that I've seen.
Well, they started making him look like Reed in the comics. They did the same thing before Sam Jackson was cast as Nick Fury because they were like, wouldn't it be cool if they got Nick Fury in the movies? So they started making Nick Fury look like Sam Jackson, and then Sam Jackson was like, I'll do it, sure. So they did the same thing with John Krasinski, and then people were like, well, we should make him you know, you guys should get him. And then I think Kevin Feige was like, fine, you assholes, I'll throw him in as a cameo and turn him into goddamn blue spaghetti.
Weirdly enough, you know who I think would have been a good Mr. Fantastic? Fucking Benedict Cumberbatch, if he wasn't already Dr. Strange.
I think he'd have been good. Mine is, I think, Penn Badgley would have been a great Mr. Fantastic.
Is he still like, Penn too young? Badgley?
He's like 30 something. I don't know.
They wanted to cast a little older for the at least the three older characters. Like Johnny seems younger, but I don't know.
No, Penn Badgley's almost 40.
Oh, okay. Well, that could work.
I think he was my pick because he's kind of. I think Reed is best when he's a bit of an asshole too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really know about Reed Richards beyond him stretching and being smart.
He sometimes turns into a villain. He's like one of those characters.
Oh, do you guys know about the Maker?
Yeah.
That's supposed to be a cool character. That's like Reed Richards.
He's an evil version of the Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe, I think.
Yeah.
He's like the big Thanos of the Ultimate Marvel Universe.
You know who else could have been good, even though it would piss off literally everyone in the entire fucking world? Hmm. Who's the guy from Monkey Man? What's his fucking name?
Dev Patel?
Yeah.
I think he would have been great, yeah. I love Dev Patel. I want him to get more work.
He was awesome. He's so good. Green Knight.
Yeah.
He's good in everything. He was good in Skins back in the olden days.
Was he Mr. Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah.
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 But so what are we going to be talking about next week?
Yeah, it is close to your recommendation. Right? I know you already mentioned it, but do you want to go ahead and reiterate it for the audience?
Well, I feel like next week we should do Captain America because it's coming out.
Well, we can do Captain America, Brave New Bird Guy, and The Wreck. I think we can do them both.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so my recommendation is When Harry Met Sally, my favorite rom-com of all time. Love that movie.
Directed by?
Oh, I don't even know. Yeah. Is it Rob Reiner?
It's Rob Reiner.
Is it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is this the 1989 version as well?
There's two versions?
Oh, I don't know, actually. I was just assuming there was a remake at some point.
Oh, no.
No, it should just be the 1989.
Yeah. Yeah, so all right, boys. I think you guys are going to like that one. You've seen it, right, Nick?
Yeah, but I'm happy to watch it again.
Just a good
There's a
good
sequel
vibes
from
movie.
2011.
The sequel? We got to watch that at some point.
That sounds like bullshit. When Harry Met Sally 2 with Billy Crystal and Helen Mirren, 2011, directed by Lindsay Crystal.
The episode
is 5 minutes long. It's like it's like a fucking short.
It's probably like an SNL short or something.
Probably
the episode
like a
title
Super Bowl
for
ad.
Next week is going to look so funny. It's going to be Captain America, Brave New World, and When Harry Met Sally.
That's going to be a perfect combo. So if you guys if you guys do not want to be spoiled for next episode where we talk about When Harry Met Sally and Captain America. It was called New World Order and then they renamed it to Brave New World because conspiracy theorists and all that. So we are going to be watching both of those, so if you don't want to be spoiled, make sure you watch those before next episode. If you are watching this on YouTube, please leave us a like and a comment. That really helps us out. And if you are listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and give us a comment on those too. We are trying to help our audio listeners grow. Thank you to all of our newer subscribers on YouTube, and thank you guys so much for watching. Chris Stuckman, we love you. Get Stuckmanized, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Get Stuckmanized.
Get Stuckmanized.